Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah.
That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, very, very happy to have these cats in here. Actually, Alan Katz.
Yeah.
And Nate Dumont. thanks. So we have Alan Katz and Nate Dumas in the studio today. We're going to be talking about the new venture, the New York Distilling Company.
That is right.
And also, in tandem with that, the Shanty, a new bar as well. We've got a lot to talk about today, guys. I mean, I was just making my notes earlier, and I realized that, shortly after my pen ran out of ink, that this is going to be a really awesome show. So... both of you guys are...
You only realized that this morning, that this was going to be an awesome show?
No. I knew it. I'm very happy to have you guys on after much anticipation. Both of you guys have been in this industry for quite some time, and everyone knows who you are. At least most people know who you are. By most people, I guess I'm just making a general, like... comment here, but Alan Katz, first of all, Southern Wine and Spirits, you're the director of mixology and beverage education.
That's correct. Yes,
spirits education. Also, you were a chairman of Slow Food for a while, and you've done so many. I've been to a lot of your seminars.
Life is short.
Yeah, dude, you got to pack it in, right? You know, doing everything that you can do, everything you want to do, man. You do everything you want to do. And Nate Dumas?
So much Thin Lizzy today.
Yeah, so much Thin Lizzy is going to happen. And Nate also, like, rad bartender. I had the pleasure of having you on with me on my staff and bartending with you for a long time.
Pleasure was mine.
Mine only, man. And, you know, you've been all over the New York bartending scene. And... You took off for a year, about a year ago. You went to Edinburgh to the Harriet Watt School for... you got a degree in brewing and distilling.
Yep, Harriet Watt University.
Yeah, and now you're back in New York. You've been here for about a year. You guys met back up, and you guys are working together on an awesome distillery and an awesome bar. Yeah. Let's just jump into, I think, for this first segment, let's talk about the distillery.
Sure.
And then we'll jump into the bar in the second half. So, it's every bartender's dream, first of all, to own their own bar. But the really big dream is to own your own distillery. And there are a lot of jealous dudes and ladies out there.
People shouldn't be jealous. It's been a long process. To be honest, the fantasy for me is... 5 or 6 years old, and in earnest, been working on this for close to 3 years with more than a few moments of cliffhanger. Should I jump? Will this ever come to a conclusion, meaning come to the starting line of being able to open something to the public? I'm ecstatic that we're finally open, but it's taken a lot of time and energy and certainly a few dollars, other people's dollars, thank goodness. But I hope people aren't jealous. I hope we can share it with people. And coming from an industry background, that's really the idea of it. We have some business agenda. We want to make things that we're excited about, and we'll see what the response is. We want to have a great bar as well. But it's also, as we evolve, a distillery, not only because of its location in New York City, but its location in the country or even humbly in the world, that people that come through New York can experience. And certainly from a professional standpoint, that we'll have bartenders, beverage directors in to do hands-on distilling, where, at least from my imagination, most have not had that experience before.
Absolutely. You know, one of the coolest things is, for me, being a bartender in this era, you know, first of all, we have so many great restaurants and so many great bars and so many great outlets just for the education of what we're doing, and it's become an occupation that is extremely fulfilling, but also like it's never ending. It's never ending.
And, people now are respecting that bartenders take their work seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what's really cool is that, you know, like you were just saying, you know, you've got this awesome, awesome platform to bring in all that education, and having it right in the middle of, like, you know, like in Williamsburg, and having it in New York City, especially since you guys from here, or not from here, but you guys are stationed here and you're out in the scene, which is another cool thing that I think like a lot of distillers don't do. They don't get out there enough. It's just an exciting time, you know. And going back to the whole do anything you want to do thing, right now you guys are you're just starting up. You've got two different gins that are on the market, and one of them, we'll talk about the Perry's Tot for a second. It's the first Navy strength gin that's been in this market in what, like a century?
Probably so. It's certainly been a long time. You know, as always stated, I'm sure when you talk to other people in the beverage alcohol business, the fun thing is that these stories, whether it's cocktail names or the derivation of different products, they get a little muddied with a drink or two on both sides of the bar. It's been a long time since there was a Navy Strength gin legally available in the United States. And our humble motto, I hope it comes off this way, is to a degree to be purposefully different. We wanted to make gin. I love gin. It's a fantastic spirit. It's had its own little mini renaissance the last, you know, 5-6 years. But there's a lot of great gin that's out there already. So how could we introduce something that was, as I said, purposefully different, that adds to the conversation of what's available, how gin is being used? Maybe it's a little retro, but hopefully a little forward-thinking as well.
Totally. You know, just for our listeners, those who don't know, can you explain to us what Navy Strength means?
Sure. Navy Strength was a term coined by the British Navy and British distilling culture back in the 18th century, when seafaring was not as safe or consistent as it is today, that naval work, naval warfare was instrumental in the defense of Western nations, certainly. And the British Navy discovered, in conjunction with distillers, that at American proof, 114 or 57% alcohol, should by accident a barrel or barrels of alcohol be spilled on board and by accident compromise munitions, well, you can still fire off your gunpowder.
Sure.
Very useful if you're going to battle. But it was also part of the social culture. So, you know, at the time, the military was very much looked up to. And, you know, there's evidence of recipes and even punches with Navy Strength gin, because that's what was available. It was a popular proof of the day.
And also, I mean, when you hear Navy Strength, you think about two spirits in particular. You think about gin and rum.
Sure.
Which are extremely, like, old school British Royal Navy days, you know, standards for punches and whatnot. And I know there's only the only one I can think of that's like a Navy Strength whiskey is the it straight at 114 is the old granddad,
right?
114, which I know Nate's a big fan of.
Yep.
So the inspiration for that was to bring something to the market that was purposefully different.
Yes.
And, you know, especially with the cocktail scene the way it is nowadays, we want those things.
Sure. And it's a competitive market in a wonderful way, where just a few years ago there were maybe a couple of dozen of boutique distilleries in the country. There are well over 300 now. There are many others that are coming online in the next couple of years. And so, you know, to be honest, it was a way, we hope, to say, this is something that's different. This is worth trying, because there's nothing else like it on the market.
Totally. And the other gin that you have right now is the Dorothy Parker gin, which is at 44% alcohol.
Yeah. Well, if you're nutty enough to launch two gins at the same time, they have to be drastically different. You've got to explain the point of difference, not only by the color of the label, but by the style. And so it's not that, 88 proof, it's light.
Are they
light.
The same like mash bill?
They're totally different recipes. The botanical recipes are different. They share some from the classic sense, certainly juniper, a certain amount of citrus, although the citrus builds are different. The little wrinkle on the Perry's Todd is that it's primarily classic botanicals, with one local botanical being a wildflower honey from upstate New York.
Oh, cool.
And on the Dorothy Parker, aside from classic botanicals, there are two that are rather modern or contemporary. One is elderberry, and the other is dried hibiscus petals.
Cool. So with these two gins already out on the market, they're already being distributed in New York.
2 weeks old.
Yeah, 2 weeks old, which is totally awesome. Craig, congratulations.
Thank you.
What has the response been so far?
The response has been great. You very, very politely say everybody knows who we are, you know, Nate as well as myself, to a degree, and with...
We've also been waiting for this for a while.
I appreciate that. With, I hope, great humility and gratification, I'm fairly confident that the people that I know in the industry are going to try the gins. And they're going to be generous enough to buy it for the first time. If they don't like it, they're not going to reorder it. So to this point, the response has been tremendous. In about 2 weeks, we've sold nearly 100 cases of gin.
Cool.
And so for us, doing everything by hand, that's a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have a beautiful Christian Carl still.
Yeah, very excited about that.
Like, I've always said that I just want one. I just want one in my house. I don't even want to fire it up. I mean, I do want to fire it up, but I just want one because they're works of art.
We can give
man.
You a photograph to put in your house.
I already have photographs of your still.
I'm trying.
No, I took photographs of the still the other night when I came to visit when you so graciously offered my band Brothers to
That's
be the
right.
house band.
House band, New York Distilling NYDC. Company.
So... When you started talking about doing this distillery quite a while back, there were some certain issues, like as there are with any distillery opening. Obviously, like there were up until like just a few years back, the taxes on opening a distillery or just running a distillery, they were like around $50,000 a year, and now
it's
they're
true.
The laws changed, now they're down around like $6,500 a
year. There are now designations, and as we were talking about off air, I wish I could remember the ceilings, but up until a certain quantity or volume of production, you're in a boutique distillery range, and the taxes reflect that, because otherwise none of these small businesses would be able to get off the ground. And so we fall into that range. We purchased a still that was as large as our finances could bear. It's a 1,000-liter still, which is probably larger than most craft distillers, boutique distillers in the country at the moment, with the hope that we'll grow into it. Yeah. That our production will increase, our versatility of product will increase. But yes, the laws have changed so that it's a little bit more tenable for someone to come in. And yeah, you got to raise a boatload of money, to be honest.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it's doable. People are excited about alcohol, and it's doable to put something like this together.
Totally. I mean, and what's so cool about it is like we're seeing so many, not so many, but we're seeing a growing number of craft distilleries popping up, and it's like I said again, you know, this time, this era of bartending and like being in the spirits world at all is like it's extremely exciting. So, one of the things that I remember you telling me about, I hope I'm not like bringing up something, throwing a curveball at you, but there was one thing,
it's the gotcha moment.
This is not the gotcha moment, Nate, but there was something that was interesting you were telling me. Actually, we were here when we were talking about it, we were here at Roberta's. But this was like a year ago, probably. You were telling me about something to do with the concrete. It was like,
well, as I said, you know, it's interesting. One, you can, in a general way, say a lot of boutique distilleries are popping up nationally. The thing that's interesting and provided some additional hurdles was doing it in the city, and specifically in New York City. You know, once upon a time, where we are now, which still has a pretty industrial feel, you know, down the street there's a cement factory and there's contract work going on around us. Where we are in Williamsburg is unbelievably surrounded by new condos now, almost at every turn. And so there is some manufacturing space, but you've got to be in the right zoning and you've got to have tests done on everything from groundwater to cement that you put down. I'll be on part of it's simply my inexperience in building. I've never built anything before. But as you're doing something that's new to scale from a city standpoint or a state standpoint, you've got to be, I guess, extra cautious that agencies know exactly what you're doing so that they approve what you ultimately want to do.
And that, like, that's, is that the DOH or the DOB or the SLA or all of the above?
Well, on building things, everything goes to the buildings department. Yeah. They have other agencies. There's also, and it's worthwhile, you know, New York City's Department of Environmental Protection is most curious about the quality of water that we put back into the system once we've distilled. What happens to it? What's the temperature? What's the pH?
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up, because I know that a lot of distilleries, like when they use their used water, they usually have to go through some sort of filtering process before they put it back into the system. What are you guys doing?
Well, as you said, at the moment we're distilling gin. A couple of things we're still evolving, but in a fun way, we are collecting some spent botanicals and sending them over to Stinky Cheese in Brooklyn and letting them wash cheese with
it. Oh, cool.
Very cool. And otherwise, there's not a lot of matter that has a tremendous amount to break down technically in the city sewer system. Next month, when we start distilling rye whiskey on site, we will take more careful approach to the pH of the finished spent water, and we'll come up with some way to essentially strain or drain water from spent mash.
Cool. I feel like I'm just asking completely dorky questions right now, so stop me if I am, because I'm just totally into this, man. And I hope our listeners are too. One other thing. Okay, I wanted to get this in there because I think it's really interesting. You guys are... You have the bar that's running tandem with the distillery. And up until recently, was that legal or... I mean, like...
Well, up until recently, there weren't distilleries to consider this...
Right.
...dual, you know,
but it's
concept.
But apparently, like you were telling me before, it's the same license.
Well, for us... and this is a relatively new, meaning just a few years old, revision of a New York state law, by having what's called a Class D farmer's distiller's license. And we have been approved for that, not because we're farmers. We're not farming. We're not growing things. But in particular for
You're growing a pretty good beard, though.
That's right. True. my cavalry look. For our rye whiskey, 100% of our grains are derived from New York state agriculture. We... now going on 2 years, have contracted with farmers up near Seneca Lake in the Finger Lake region to grow all of our grains for what will ultimately be our rocket rye and then straight rye whiskey. And that's where the revision started coming in to, from a state standpoint, allow a boutique distiller to also have not just a tasting room, but a bar, should they so choose.
Killer. And I love the bar. And right when we get back from this this break that we're going to take, we're going to talk a lot about the Shanty,
cool.
Which is the bar that's connected to the NYDC.
That's right.
Cool. When we get back, we'll be talking with Nate DeMoss and Alan Katz, New York Distilling Company and the Shanty. Back in a few.
Take you, don't let them break you. You
do anything you want to do.
Anything at all. You can have a distillery with a bar inside of it.
Hell yeah, you can. You want.
Says who?
And you can totally harvest heirloom varietals of rye.
Done.
Might as well. During the break, we were talking about the heirloom varietals that you were working with, Alan Katz.
Well, we, you know, again, in the idea of what can we do to add to the conversation from putting these products out into the market with the two gins. Again, both are they're different than anything else you'd find there. That's currently or widely available. When it came to the rye whiskeys, I was always interested in rye. I'm from Maryland originally, grew up with a wonderful heritage of rye whiskey. And I always knew that would be part of the picture of the New York Distilling Company. And as much as I love bourbon, we're with intention not distilling bourbon or producing bourbon from any of our mash bills. But we wanted to look at what kind of grains, again, were inherent or historic with some further purpose or evaluation. And so we did, through the farmers that we work with, Rick Peterson in particular, Peterson Farms up near Seneca Lake, did some research to discover particular heirloom varieties of rye that he could then experiment with from a growing standpoint, a seasonality standpoint. You know, rye is one of those interesting grains that you can get, you know, more than one harvest a year from. And that will be part of the interest of the experiment of once we start distilling these grains to see how that, you know, adds to the conversation, adds to the flavor. Whiskey is, you know, an entertaining, an interesting thing because it's not like the gin where we can make and bottle this literally in a week's time. The whiskey, which we will taste in an ongoing fashion, we know will not be at its reasonable maturity for more in at least a few years.
Right. And are you guys going to do, are you planning on doing like a straight whiskey, meaning, you know, like obviously it's going to be at least 2 years old?
We absolutely will. Our goal, our intention is that for straight rye, it'll have a minimum of 3 years actually.
Oh, cool.
In the barrel. And we'll try and be patient. And as I've come to say, it will be 3 years unless our lives depend on it.
Well, that's the thing about whiskey, you know, like the cost comes from the time, you know,
yep.
Time is money with yep. that. So during the break, we were also talking about, well, during the break, Nate was so kind to pour some of the gin out for us. So I think it's a good enough time to try some.
Might as well.
Is this the Dorothy Parker?
This is the Dorothy Parker.
Cool. So let's talk about the nice. Let's talk about the mix of botanicals real quick.
This has got 8 botanicals that hopefully are of interest. Juniper is prominent and the most significant, and we wanted to do gins that had a strong juniper base but weren't just locked into that. So for example, just juniper and citrus, or juniper and coriander spice, for example. So the Dorothy Parker, again, 8 botanicals, again, most are classic juniper, orange and lemon peel, coriander, the smallest amounts of a sweeter to normal, at least to my palate, cinnamon, whole green cardamom pods. Yep. Whole star anise, a handful. They are literally measured out by weight, but it looks like a handful. And then the two that are contemporary, as we said at the top, are elderberry and hibiscus. And just to give you some sense of the mathematics, the ratio for elderberry and juniper, it's 12 parts juniper to 1 part elderberry, and 26 parts juniper to 1 part dried hibiscus petals. So they're there. They're very fragrant. The intention, and Nate's done some masterful stuff with these gins already, is that, again, from a sipping standpoint, hopefully you notice most of these botanicals. It's when you get down to mixing it that some are suppressed, some come out in different ways, depending on if it's a stir drink, a shaken sour, a martini, for example. And that is an interesting reflection on how the botanicals act in a mixed drink.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's when you were just talking about mathematics, you were telling me a story before the show about a gentleman from the Dorothy Parker Society.
Yes.
And he was kind of freaking out about the proof, which is 88, so it's 44% alcohol.
That is true. So, and the Dorothy Parker gin, named for one of my favorite characters, one of my favorite writers, actually. And it was a great, great gin drinker and had more than several occasions to Taiwan on at the Algonquin Hotel, was probably most noted for being part of the Algonquin Roundtable. And I swear to you, I've been there many times, but I never put one and one together that the Algonquin is located on 44th Street in Manhattan.
And the guy was freaking out because...
He was.
He was like, oh, why did you make it 44
proof? Well, I know.
Because it was on 44th Street?
Well, of course.
But then also, 44, you got 4 and 4, 8 botanicals.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Gotcha moment.
Damon Bolton, everybody.
So, yeah, it's a great gin.
I like to say there's 88 keys on a piano.
Oh, snap.
All sorts of numerology happening.
I like this. The show is taking off into a weird direction. So this one's awesome. I mean, like, so to me, it's great because, like, it's definitely, it feels like a new American style gin, but it has that, like, London Dry quality to it. To a certain extent.
Yeah, well, that's great.
So
I mean,
it kind of makes...
Again, what's most important to us is that it's mixable. And that the juniper's there. It's got a little bit of sweetness on the nose, and that's the elderberry and hibiscus. But, you know, again, when you mix with that, it stands to appropriately suppress just a little bit of that sweetness.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering, are you doing... So you say you're doing different botanical mixes for this, and then the other one, the Perry's Tot, which is the Navy Strength one. So what's the botanical lineup kind of? How is it different from the?
Well, and I will say, in terms of their development, and these are a year and a half's worth of distilling in the making at a Friends Distillery up in Warwick, New York, we started with the Navy Strength gin because I always knew that we wanted to do that. And I should say, I mean, the reason you don't see a lot of Navy Strength gin or Navy Strength rums is they're not as profitable. You're not adding as much water to bring things to bottling proof.
Yeah.
And so from a big company standpoint, there's less interest in doing that, say from the, you know, the cultural...
Yeah.
Addition of something like this kind of product. The botanicals in the Navy Strength, they're 10. We start again with juniper. There's three types of citrus. In descending order, orange, lemon, and grapefruit peel, all dried. Coriander. Angelica root, which most people haven't seen unless you're in a botanical shop.
Right.
and it doesn't add a ton of flavor, maybe just a little bit of earthiness. But it's a real cohesive botanical. It helps a lot of flavors adhere to each other. And then we round out with some of those spices again. Again, the sweet cinnamon, whole green cardamom pod, star anise, and then our fun little wrinkle, this wildflower honey from upstate New York.
It's very, very good. I mean,
thank
like,
you.
It's one of those gins, like, even though it's overproofed by far.
You're still sitting here.
Still sitting here. So we're still talking about it.
Yeah.
For the time being.
And it's such a cool addition for the, you know, the cocktail world, you know,
especially
for
fun thing.
Like purists, historians.
Most people haven't worked with it. So, you know, we're patient and friendly to say, let's try it. Let's try it together.
Yeah.
And see what we can come up with.
You know, awesome.
As simple as a tot and tonic, a gin and tonic. I use a little bit less gin in that fashion in the gin and tonic with Perry's Tot, but you eminently taste the gin.
Yeah.
Because it's overproof.
It's very cool. And these are both prominently featured at the bar that's connected to the distilling, the New York Distilling Company, the Shanty, which I've had the pleasure of going by and maybe had a little too much fun.
Yeah.
Or not enough. I don't know. Let's talk about the bar for a little bit. So, Nate DeMoss, you're one of my veteran bartenders, and you've been, seriously, everywhere in this amazing city. You were at Pegu Club, PDT, Mary Queen of Scotch. You've been at all the Julie Reiner places, Flatiron, Clover Club, and Lonnie Kai. You've been in Primeats.
I've gotten around in Primeats.
You've been around, man. You've been around.
Yeah.
So let's talk. I mean, obviously, you've got these awesome gins that are being produced literally, like, on premise or right next door, eventually these whiskeys. And what are some of the ways that you've featured the gin at the bar? I know, obviously, there's Ping Gin. You're doing Ping Gins.
Yep. That was one of Katie Stipe's ideas. you know, I'm lucky enough to have a pretty all-star bartending crew. Katie had the idea that we should serve pink gin out of the small still that's located on the back of the bar. And kind of taking that idea and running with it, it seemed to make sense to use the Dorothy Parker, which is, you know, 44% alcohol. And then in the interest of doing a house pink gin that wasn't straight gin and Angostura bitters, decided to add a little Campari to it, and I think it softens it up, makes it really pretty.
Sounds like something you and Katie would do.
Yeah. And it's great, you know, to serve up just as a simple beer and shot, a nice, easy thing on the menu, quick and easy for our bartenders to churn out, but incredibly tasty.
Cool. What are some of the, I mean, you've been one of my favorite people to work with. Just I'm going to go ahead and say that. Especially with one of my favorite drinks, which is kind of in a weird way a riff on a B and it's like a B&B meets Toronto.
B&B.
Yeah, totally. It's called the Montgomery Smith, which was featured in the PDT cocktail book that just came out. Jimmy Hen was on about a month ago to promote the book.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite cocktails. I mean, like, you have a way with making very, I hope this doesn't sound weird, but very, like, very delicious drinks, but keeping them very simplified. Of course, there was the Cocksucker Blues. You remember that one?
Oh, that was a messy night.
But
I'd forgotten about that. But gotcha moment.
Yeah, gotcha moment. Gotcha. Hey, Jack, we're going to have to get a gotcha button on the, like, the MIDI. Do you have one? Let's make it.
That's the best I got.
Oh, that was amazing. Oh my God. I didn't know we had that. That's amazing. But you have a really great way of putting out very classically minded cocktails. Like what I've noticed from your works is that you do a lot of cocktails with stuff that would have existed back in those days.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you know. Very boozy, but very delicious and very balanced cocktails. What are, and I wanted you to talk a little bit about this. I mean, like, I know that you are one of the dudes that owns, like, the most volumes of original, like, classic cocktail books.
I'm a huge nerd.
You were telling me that you have, like, 7 copies of, like, the Charles H. Baker's
Gentleman's Companion. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
7,
like a lot. At least 7. It's wow, ridiculous.
Like, how did you get into this? I mean,
the collecting thing,
or just like the classic bartending thing in general?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, going way back, I was working in Seattle at a pretty divey bar, and I was a server and a host and a bar back, and you know, naturally wanted to get into tending bar, and sort of asked people, you know, how do I do this? And one of the managers was just like, just buy some books, you learn some recipes, you know, thinking of things like Cosmos and et cetera. But I happened upon Charles Schumann's book, American Bar, and, you know, it's a book that some of the recipes are amazing, some of them, you know, maybe I do them a little differently, but it's really rooted in classic...
Sure.
Bartending, classic mixology, from everything from...
And it's a hardback, so...
I mean, yeah, the style of the book.
Classically...
Woodcuts. Like, yeah. It was really classy. So I guess that kind of started me down that path, and then was lucky enough to get on at Pegu Club when I moved to town. I'd met, you know, a good friend, Brian Miller, at Gary Reagan's Cocktails in the Country back in the day. And when I moved to town, he brought me in to meet Audrey, and... Audrey hired me, and she was a big book collector. So
right.
Greg Bohm was coming around, and, you know, we had original 1867 Jerry Thomas's Behind the Bar. It was just ridiculous. And about the time I was leaving, you know, naturally I wanted to have some sort of library at my fingertips to investigate classic cocktails on my own. And that started the... book collecting that I've spent way too much money on over the years.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's I feel like the same way about collecting records, you know,
it's yeah.
like, and being a musician. It's like, you have to do your research, you know?
Yeah, totally.
You got to know what sounds good
yeah.
before you can play something good.
Yeah.
And you got to know what tastes good. And just understanding, like, the way that, like, proportions work and how technique works in cocktails is a huge deal. And like we were saying before, you know, about the Montgomery Smith, I think it's... I love... Well, first of all, everyone knows I love Fernet Branca, but like I love cognac too, man. And that, yeah. that cocktail is just killer. As far as the shanty goes, what is your focus as far as I mean, are you going to be like a spirits outlet? Yeah, yeah. Or are you going to be like doing cocktails
for the shanty? We want to keep it pretty low key. I mean, we have some of the greatest cocktail bartenders in America working with us there, and we're insanely lucky to have the staff that we do, but at the same time, we are not aiming to be another hardcore classic cocktail bar. I want people to feel completely at ease, come in and order a beer and a shot, rocking out to some Thin Lizzy and hanging out and having a good time, so you'll find some great classic cocktails on the menu. You'll find some really nice creative drinks that the staff has come up with. But you can also get beer in a can and just hang out and rock out.
The still.
Yeah, exactly.
Occasionally.
Yeah. One of the things we've talked about quite a bit on this show is the fact that, like you just said, you have an all-star cast behind the bar. And with so many bars popping up nowadays, especially bars that didn't know what they're doing or have this ambition and this drive to preserve the classics and also to invent all these amazing contemporary cocktails, is that with so many bars opening up, they're kind of opening up faster than we have like enough bartenders to, to like staff them up. And
But I think it's always been that case. I mean, I remember when I was at Pig Club and Death and Company opened and like half the staff went over there. It's like, I actually feel like there are more amazing bartenders in New York now per cocktail bar than there ever has been.
I agree.
Because people just keep moving here.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, people are moving here from all over the country, all over the world to tend bar and be awesome at it. And it's pretty cool, you know. You can go into
definitely cool, man.
Restaurants that 5 years ago were selling crappy cocktails with sour mix and whatever, and now they've stepped up and they've realized, hey, we're a serious restaurant. We need to have a serious bar program too.
Absolutely.
So,
and it's again going back to the exciting times that we're living in. You know, where you can have a distillery in New York City and make Navy Strength gin, and you can have a bar where I feel like the shanty is kind of a lot like Dram in a way, because it's an all-star staff, but it's like chill and low-key. If you want to have a beer and a can and a shot, you can have that. But also if you want like just a really badass cocktail, you could do that too.
Totally. 79 Richardson. Between Leonard and Lorimer.
Like I said, man, it's really, really exciting times for this whole industry.
Absolutely.
You know? And I just want to congratulate you guys again on the opening. And
is waiting for you.
I'll probably head there after this.
Yep.
But before I do that, I do want to say something. Thanks again for coming on the show. And I want to thank my producer, Jack Inslee. The Speakeasy has been on the air for a year now.
Amen.
Nice.
This will be the last show of 2011, and I'm happy to have you two on.
I have a sound effect for that.
Yeah.
I want the tiger growl again.
There it is.
This is so awesome.
Gotcha.
I feel like, gotcha. That's the guy. That's the
coming in 2012.
Dude, this is like the morning radio happy hour thing.
Yeah.
So many sound effects. Do you have a spring?
No, I don't.
You don't? Oh. Okay. But
I was promised a spring.
Man, but on a serious note again, thank Thank you so much for coming on the show. And be sure to check out New York Distilling Company, the bar, the Shanty. And it's
NYDistilling.com.
.com.
79 Richardson Street.
Richardson. Not Richardson.
Richardson between Leonard and Lorimer.
Gotcha moment. All right. That's it for the Speakeasy for this year. We'll see you next time. Cheers, guys. Well, I wouldn't lie. It gets higher than a kite. Now when you see
him stumbling up and down the street. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The holidays are here, and it's time to head to the Heritage Meat Shop for some juicy Berkshire pork roast, tender Piedmontese steaks, traditional Christmas goose, and duck. Our world-famous charcuterie and fresh meats are guaranteed to please everyone, whether it's a party of two or 200. Be sure to stop by the Heritage Meat Shop to make your holiday celebration a delicious and memorable event. The Heritage Meat Shop is located at 120 Essex Street in the historic Essex Street Market on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Call 212-539-1111 to order now.